very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It is Friday. The best day ever invented, as I like to say. Big fan of this days.
I like to agree with you when you say that.
Most Fridays, something really awful has to happen to ruin it, doesn't it?
Don't say that.
I don't think it's going to today.
You're kind of a soothsayer.
I will not say sooth today, Wendy.
All right, good.
Today is the day I will not say sooth. So if you want to join in, you know how to do it. Just call us or text us at 312-981-7200. It's just that simple. I don't make a practice of watching the Bears games because I find them highly frustrating. Because I remember there was a time where you would sit down on a Sunday afternoon. They don't do football games on Sundays anymore.
I know. Isn't that weird? It's Monday and Thursdays.
Yeah. Sundays, they just changed it for some reason. So you'd sit on a Sunday for 3 hours, and you'd be entertained by the Chicago Bears. Sometimes they'd win. A lot of times they'd win. Sometimes they wouldn't win. But what you had was 3 hours of solid entertainment. Then they decided that wasn't working, so they went a different direction. So last night I'm watching the game, and one of the Bears, Danny Trevathan, has just the ugliest hit on a member of the Green Bay Packers. Just the play was coming to an end, and he just came out of nowhere and just slammed the guy in the helmet.
He's in trouble.
Hurt him a lot, yeah. And it really, I think it made the team look bad. It made the city look bad. It made our country look bad. Our planet.
It reminded me, who did the body slam of Jim McMahon? The Green Bay Packer that was at Soldier Field.
Who was that?
Was it Harvey Martin? Is that the right name?
Was it Harvey Martin? I don't think it was.
I'm not even sure he was a Packer.
I think he was a cowboy.
Yeah, me too.
Charles Martin.
Charles Martin. Thank you very much. That's the guy.
Just call me Lefty.
Yeah.
I'm calling from Brookfield. I'm going to talk sports.
But, you know, it was just kind of a disgusting thing
unnecessary.
That made everyone not like Wisconsin for a while.
Right, right.
Well, people already don't like the Chicago Bears, so really no losses there.
No, it was a bad. I mean, it was.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, well, that's why.
I just know that I heard he was in trouble for it. Has he been suspended?
He will be.
I can't believe he wasn't thrown out.
Yeah, that. Me too. Because
they let
the
him
kind
play
of
after
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what'll happen now is they'll review it and they'll decide, you know, how big of a fine he'll pay and how many games he'll have to sit out. But it was so unnecessary. And then you think about it, I don't know the guy on the Packers' name, Steve. Do you, the guy that the hit was on?
I'm sorry.
Devontae Adams.
Devontae Adams.
What? It's an upside-down world.
Yep. Oh, thank you very much.
He's just laying there on the field.
He's in the hospital.
And, yeah, he ended up, he's in the hospital. And he's just laying there and you're thinking to yourself, This has the potential to just be life-changing for him. He might be paralyzed. We don't know.
Holy crap.
When he left, they said he was moving all extremities.
Was he?
Yeah, he gave a thumbs up.
Good news.
Post-game news conference, I saw some of that, and they said he was itching to get out of the hospital. So.
But then there was very little retaliation, if any, from the Packers' side. Was there, Steve? Did you see anything after? I didn't watch the rest of the game. I watched another player too, and that was it.
I think there were like 35 retaliations.
Were there?
Yeah, wasn't it 35-7? What was the
final? Oh, the points. Yeah, if you go by points, it was 35-14. Yeah, so I guess they did have they had some retaliation.
So he got penalized for unnecessary roughness, but it seems more than that.
Yeah, because they know the risks now. I mean, I can't believe there was ever a time in football that you didn't know the risk of playing football. It's big, hard, strong guys hitting each other at full speed. It's dangerous, but when you blindside a guy like this, when a play is pretty much coming to an end, and it was helmet-on-helmet contact, and the guy's just laying there, I mean, what is he thinking? Why would you do something like
that? One of the refs
said after the game that it was an aggressive play, but he certainly didn't mean to hurt him, and he was going to reach out to him and... You know, just
so, I hope so.
So that's out there. He said he didn't mean to and didn't think of it or realize it was a penalty invoking play when he did
it. I always give a guy, an athlete, some credit if they do follow up and they say, believe me, that was not my goal. I said this a week ago. If I was a baseball pitcher, every time I hit a guy with a baseball, I would apologize, which you don't see in baseball. You see it every once in a while. But I would never, ever hit a guy and not go over and go, everything okay? Because I didn't want to hit anybody.
I see it when they're changing innings, but right, I'd be running up there to him going, are you okay? Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
I would write out an apology.
On a baseball?
Send him,
and then hit him with it?
Whatever baseball I hit him with, I would apologize on the baseball, sign it to him, and then I'd send him, you know, a box of Triscuits or whatever his favorite snack food was. I'd find out what his favorite snack food was.
Sunflower seeds.
Ho-Hos, whatever he liked. I'd send him a shipment.
One of the refs is quoted as saying, from my perspective, I just didn't see enough to have it rise to that level of being ejected. But don't they have enough refs where you think one of them would have seen it?
Yes. And the way that play played out, I would think every ref's eyes would have been on it because that was the guy with the ball.
You're right.
I mean, there was nowhere else to look but where the ball was.
His mouth guard flew out of the helmet and onto the field, which, I mean, flew. So, you know, that's hard to do. First of all, to dislodge it and to dislodge it through a face mask.
And that's what made the announcers, I don't know who was doing the game last night. Is it still Kurt Gowdy doing games, Steve?
Kurt Gowdy and Pat Summerall.
It was Pat Summerall.
No, Tony Romo and the main play-by-play guy for CBS.
Not Brent Musburger.
Danny Trejo?
No.
Come on.
It's not Danny Trejo.
Come on, Wendy, you've had all our answers.
No, I'm busy looking for the video. I want to see the hit. I didn't watch because there was a rain delay last night, and I thought, boy, that turned wonderfully for the Cubs. Maybe it'll do the same for the Bears.
But when the mouth guard flew out, that's when the announcers realized the severity of it, because that is when it gets serious. So it was just an ugly, ugly play. It's so funny because I watched maybe 8 or 10 minutes of the game last night, and that was like all I needed to see. I'm like,
I missed the beginning, and I asked Jimmy Mack, and he said that the Packers were all connected. They connected arms. What did the Bears do?
Steve, do you know? I didn't see any of that.
They did the same thing. I was watching it. I was waiting for them to show people in the stands. Like, I wanted to see the obligatory Bear fan, Packer fan interlocked in arms.
I heard you say that yesterday on John Williams' show. If you could get the Packer fans and Bear fans in the stadium to connect arms, then we have something.
Right. And I think they did, but I didn't see a lot of shots of that.
Isn't it funny what we watch for in a football game now? You used to watch the game. Now you want to see what's going on with the national anthem in the beginning.
Do you think the players on both sides would interlock arms like Packer guy, Bear guy, or would that be too much? That'd be too much.
If they were going to a square dance, maybe.
Right.
Who does it hurt?
When is the big NFL square dance this year?
I don't know.
They do one every year. I never remember when they do it. Here's some audio that I find slightly disturbing that I would love to share with you. As you know, they are trying their best to restructure the taxes just a little bit. Some people, as anytime they change the tax structure, some people benefit from this, some people suffer from this, right?
Corporations are going to benefit quite a bit,
and I don't know that
we are.
It looks like, if it plays out the way it's supposed to, the people that would be most affected would be your middle class. You're quickly shrinking middle class. Now, yesterday, Gary Cohn comes out. I don't know if you're aware of Gary Cohn.
Walking in Memphis, that guy?
Not that. No.
That's Mark Cohn.
That's Mark Cohn.
Okay.
Although that would have been interesting to bring him out. Gary Cohn has made a lot of money over the years being a very wise investment banker. He's a friend of Donald Trump's, and Donald Trump named him as his chief economic advisor. So he comes out yesterday, and he's explaining to people the benefits of this new tax structure and explaining that if it all goes well, your typical family would receive about $1,000. And that's not bad. And then he's explaining to everybody what $1,000 will get you. And listen, because I had no idea what the typical family could do with $1,000 until Gary Cohn explained it to me yesterday. Listen how exciting this is.
I think what the American people are concerned about is their financial position. If we allow a family to keep another $1,000 of their income, what does that mean? They can renovate their kitchen. They can buy a new car. They can take a family vacation. They can increase their lifestyle.
So for $1,000, Wendy, you can renovate your kitchen.
You can't. Trust me.
You can take a family vacation.
One person.
If you wanted to.
Single family, like solo person.
You can buy a new car.
Can't even get a used Yugo for $1,000. What is he, a whack job?
When he says the part about buying the car, you hear him, he stops. Like he goes, you can, like, do I dare it? Yeah, I'm going to say it. You can buy a new car. Can you play that part, just that one part again, Cassara? I just want to, because the first time I heard it, I went, he's kidding, right? At the end, he's going to go, well, you can't really renovate your kitchen or take a vacation or buy a car, but he stands by this.
Family to keep another $1,000 of their income. What does that mean? They can renovate their kitchen. They can buy a new. They can buy a new car.
See?
They can take a family vacation. They can increase their lifestyle.
Where does he vacation and buy his cars and renovate his kitchens?
I know the Edge Kitchen and Bath gives you a great deal,
yes,
but I'm telling you, it's no $1,000 for a new kitchen.
Do.
Trust me on that one. You can't. Maybe you could buy a new light fixture and a new sink for $1,000. I mean, not sink, a faucet for $1,000. Maybe.
It would be very nice to receive an extra $1,000. Don't get me wrong. Every little bit helps. But what this shows is, and people have always said this about politicians, it's the reason some politicians have not been elected is because there's the myth that they're out of touch with reality. But this guy proves it. Gary Cohn proves it. No one's buying any new car anytime soon for $1,000.
Even if you lease one, that's not enough to put down on it.
I know.
So out of touch with reality. There, I feel like I should be at a podium.
I just like that a guy is brave enough to do that. Like, I would say to people, look, I didn't write this speech, so I'm going to say some stuff, and some of it's true, some of it's not true. You decide which isn't and isn't true. But he got to the part and went, no, I got to go ahead with it. I'm going to say it. You can buy a new car for $1,000.
And Ted wants to talk to us. Ted, we are not saying that it wouldn't be great to save $1,000, but can you really get a kitchen or a vacation or a car with it?
I don't know if I would want to drive that car if it was but we could. Hey, when we go take over the Waffle House, we could go repeatedly for a long time.
Oh, for $1,000 at the Waffle House, you eat like a king.
Yeah, exactly. You got to look at the positive side because, yeah, I'm not starting that kitchen project on that. No way.
No.
Nope. Oh, just out of touch with reality. I mean, what a stupid thing to say.
Ted, thank you. We appreciate the call.
Not you, Ted. You, yeah. Yours wasn't stupid.
I was going to say, I didn't.
Why are you mad at Ted?
I'm not. Let's go to the Waffle House.
He's on our side.
Thanks, Ted.
Ted's on our side.
So this is the guy. He's the chief economic advisor to the president. So does the president, like, do they have a conversation prior? And they go, well, how do we sell this thing? How do we sell? It's great. People hear they're getting $1,000. You get excited. I would get it. If for any reason somebody said every year an extra $1,000 tax-wise, I love it. But don't sell it to me as a way to buy a car, take a vacation, or anything similar, because it's not going to be.
All right, Bill, you guys are out of touch. Some low-income people do buy $1,000 cars. I get that.
They make cars for $1,000?
Well, used, yeah.
Okay.
Used
car. All right.
Wendy is a ditz. Wow, so lucky we have Wendy to explain these difficult topics for us. I'm here to help. Who does it hurt?
And
who can it hurt? What is my tagline?
Something like that. I think it's something like that. And it was me who picked this. It was not Wendy, only because of the audacity that somebody would stand in front of the American people and say, here's all the wonderful things you can do with this $1,000 we're going to send your way. Because that's a lie. You can't do any of those things for $1,000.
You can buy a used car.
You could buy a
My
used
car was about $1,000.
For $1,000, but it's not the miracle that he's presenting.
No. And he said buy a new car.
He said those words.
He didn't
words.
Say you could buy a used automobile.
Right.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Wendy. I back quite a few years ago, the television show West Wing, I'm a big fan of that show a long time ago, there was a comment made that when somebody in politics like that gentleman, who's so absorbently rich, they couldn't even tell you how much a gallon of milk costs right now compared to, so they have no relations to how much a car costs anymore because they don't buy a car. They don't have any idea. So they've lost reality on, you know, what something costs, which is why they ramble on with comments like that.
Who asked Mitt Romney at some point, as Mitt Romney was running for president, there was a question like that, like what does milk cost or what does gas cost, and he didn't know. Do you remember that? I don't remember what the question was, but there was one where you think to yourself, well, this is something that your average American is struggling with, but once you reach a point of that kind of wealth, you don't even think about it anymore. And this guy, Gary Cohn, just proved it as beautifully as you could. He doesn't know what $1,000 is worth.
He doesn't understand what $1,000 is. I bet he wouldn't be able to tell you how much his staff is getting paid. And I'm not talking about his office staff, but his house staff
right.
is getting paid. So he can't even relate. This is a person who couldn't even relate to the idea of the minimum wage or anything like that because it's just so out of his circle of reality that there's no reason for him to understand that type of thing. I mean, it's so beyond his – it goes back to when – remember when we all got that like $500 gift from the government.
Yeah.
And then had to pay it back the next year, right, in taxes?
Yeah, but exactly. And everybody, hey, and they were going to regenerate the economy. And all anybody did was pay down their credit cards, maybe, or and go and buy, you know, an extra movie or go out to dinner once. And then the, no one reminded us until the end of the year that we had to pay back the increase in taxes on all that. So it wasn't that they gave us the money. They loaned us the money, and then they got the interest on it.
Right. So they benefited in the end anyway. Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah.
Thank you, Glenn.
You're not mad at Glenn, too, are
I'm
you?
Not mad at anybody.
Okay. All right.
And I am a dit sometimes, so I'm not even mad at that person.
I just want to point out, MarketWatch fact-checked this speech. And I don't think MarketWatch is usually one that fact-checks, but they did on this. They said, according to Kelley Blue Book, the average new car is now costing, as of January 2017, $35,000. Not $1,000, but $35,000. A kitchen renovation runs on average of $10,000 to $15,000, and a vacation averages right now, an American vacation costs roughly $1,145 per person.
Right.
A family of four would pay $4,580. So yeah, it would be beautiful to be given $1,000 as a tax break, but you're not going to get a new car, you're not going to remodel your kitchen, and you're not going to take a trip with your family.
773 put it best, too. He's really out of touch. More realistic would be many people will be able to pay off a bill, get some dental care, buy the kids some needed clothing or a pair of shoes. That's what comes to my mind.
Doesn't sound as glamorous.
Sure doesn't, but right? That's more accurate.
Right.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Just got the news. I believe it was yesterday. Julia Louis-Dreyfus came out. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. She is that one. And October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so we're getting a jump on things today. We have a 2-time Olympic beach volleyball medalist in the studio with us, April Ross. Hi, April. How are you?
Good, thanks.
And Dave Zimmer of Fleet Feet. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
You guys have hooked up for Project Zero. Explain that to us.
I'll let April explain Project Zero. We're just very excited to have a 2-time Olympian hanging out with us. That's a thrill for us.
Yeah, Project Zero is kind of an effort between Mizuno and Fleet Feet Sports and the Breast Cancer Research Foundation to fund research that will get, you know, the lives lost from breast cancer down to zero eventually. And we have this promotion going on with Fleet Feet where if you buy the limited edition shoes and shirts, portion of the proceeds go towards breast cancer research.
And research is key. I know my grandmother had breast cancer many, many years ago, and what actually took her life was burns she suffered from radiation because no one knew what was going on. So I have to say, raising awareness, we are getting a lot farther, but not good enough.
No, and yeah, seeing what my mom went through so long ago, 16, 20, 25 years ago, you know, I want to see that research pushed and the science to get better and better because it wasn't good enough then at all. And I think, you know, all the new research coming out is very promising, and so we need to continue on that front. Like you said, awareness has been around forever, and I think people are pretty aware of how to, you know, do what they can to prevent the disease. We need to figure out how to cure it now.
Amen.
So the situation that we all learned about yesterday with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, which at one point would have been, I hate to say, almost a death sentence. At this point, it isn't necessarily, right? There's different treatments available that weren't available not that long ago.
Yeah, you know, I work with a couple different foundations regarding breast cancer research, and another organization I work with is on the edge of cutting edge research that is, you know, crazy, and I wasn't aware of those things, and I think a lot of people aren't aware of those things. So there's a lot out there now that, mm-hmm. you know, I think people think of breast cancer as a curable disease. We still need to get a lot better. We need to get that number down to zero, which is, you know, the whole effort of Project Zero. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's not a death sentence
right.
at all
right.
these days.
And, you know, the whole thing is get your mammograms, get tested, and because now it's amazing with these 3D or 4D, I think they even have now, and ultrasounds. One of my technicians was telling me how they can pinpoint something that is just like a little speck, like a little tip of a pin, and then they can monitor and figure it out. Now, when cancer returns, when it metastasizes, am I saying that right? Is that what happened with your mother?
Yeah, several times. Yeah, my mom went into remission 3 or 4 times. And as a young kid, you think like, oh, it's gone. She's healed and it's not coming back. So every time it came back, it was devastating. So we need to figure out how to keep it away once it's out of there.
And then if somebody does have this in their family, they want to even go in more often, don't they, just to make sure?
Yeah, I think you're at a higher risk, is what they say. There's gene testing that you can go actually figure it out. So that's great. But I think one of the hugest things is still prevention. So, it's working out, it's eating right. I think that's the biggest thing you can do for yourself.
Every once in a while, April, somebody will come out and say mammograms might not be the best idea. What's behind that? Why would people say maybe you might want to hold back on a mammogram? I'm not sure why.
Who
that would
says
be.
That?
I don't know. Every once in a while, I'll hear somebody come
that.
Out and say it might work against you for
really?
Some reason. I don't know why.
I think it's the imaging and the radiation.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that could be bad for you, or maybe it's not the best detection method. I know people push MRIs for detection, and it's kind of like I've dealt with this. My health insurance, like they don't sometimes cover the most progressive ways to detect
really?
These things. Yeah, and so you have to go the accepted route of the mammogram and the ultrasound and stuff. So hopefully we can become more progressive on all fronts.
Dave Zimmer is also here from Fleet Feet. He's the CEO of Fleet Feet. Your involvement, let's talk about that for a little bit, Dave.
On a personal level, my mother is a breast cancer survivor, was diagnosed in 1999 after a mammogram that she had went into a file and was needed to be looked at, and she waited a full year to have it looked at.
What, did they forget?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. And so when she went back for her annual, it was brought up, and she had to go in and get treatment, chemotherapy and radiation. And as April was talking about, the progression of research needs to continue, which is why Project Zero is so important, to be able to give people a really good chance of survival, but also giving education so they know what to be an advocate for. That's a big part of it, is making sure that you're not only having your family be an advocate for you, but being an advocate for yourself.
How long has Fleet Feet been around? Because I love that name, and I've seen you all over the place, the name.
I'm very fond of the name as well, and we've been around for 21 years in Chicago.
And always adding your name to great causes, so good job with that.
Thank you. We look at, sports is incredibly giving. Running as a activity is incredibly giving. We have the Chicago Marathon coming up next week, and, over $18 million is going to go to charity from people crossing the finish line. And being able to be involved with Mizuno and being involved with April on Project Zero is just going to get more money going towards great research.
Yeah.
April, you're going to be at a particular Fleet Feet. Is that what's happening?
Tomorrow, yes, from 10 o'clock in the morning until noon at the Fleet Feet Sports in Old Town at North Avenue in Wells. April is going to be how often do you get to hang out with a two-time Olympian, two-time medalist? That's just I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm still thrilled that I get to sit next to a medalist.
Are you going to set her up, bump it up so she can spike it?
I do need to train.
So for everybody at home, I'm 5'6", April's 6'1". There's no way that I can set her up for anything.
And I'm small in beach volleyball now.
Boy, that's true, isn't it? The players just, for some reason, just keep getting taller and taller and taller.
Yeah, especially the more popular beach volleyball gets, the more indoor players, traditionally indoor players, come out to the beach. And we have, some 6'5 girls. On the men's side, there's a lot of 7-footers. It's getting huge.
Wow.
Why are we growing them so big these days?
Something's in the water.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Is it so much different? I mean, obviously it's different playing on a court than it is on a beach volleyball, but which do you prefer?
I prefer being out on the beach.
Growing up,
I wanted to be indoor because it's easier. You're moving on the hard ground, but just the lifestyle playing beach volleyball and being outside every day and getting a good tan, getting that vitamin D, having control over your schedule. I hire my coach. I decide everything for myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean... kind of a control freak, so that works for me.
What about the adjustment? Standard volleyball is six on a side, but then you see it often two on a side. So that's got to be a huge adjustment, right?
Yeah. So in beach volleyball, there's two. It's 2v2. There are no substitutes. There are no coaches with you during your match. So you can't have a bad match. If you have a bad match, you lose and you're done. So there's no one that can come in and help you out. You have to kind of show up every single day if you want to do well.
Why that decision of not allowing a coach there? That seems like it would work against you. Why? I don't understand that.
I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, kind of stemmed from tennis and they're not allowed to
have
coaches. I think it's just a player-driven sport.
Yeah.
And they want to keep it that way. So they don't want the coaches kind of being involved.
I guess.
April Ross in the studio with us, two-time Olympic beach volleyball medalist. Dave Zimmer, Fleet Feet. I said it right every time and then screwed it up. April, you threw out the pitch last night at the last home game for the Chicago White Sox. How'd it go?
It went pretty well. I didn't warm up at all. I didn't practice at all.
Brave woman.
I don't know if you saw the stats. You have the third lowest ERA on the White Sox as of today.
That's okay. I'll take it.
She threw an amazing cutter, just dove right out.
It did. It went right over the plate. It just bounced right before the catcher's glove.
Oh, no.
But still, over the plate, there are a lot of guys out there that can't get it over the plate.
I feel like someone might have swung at it.
And missed.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Keep a positive attitude. That's perfect.
How can people listening help out with Project Zero?
Well, showing up tomorrow and being part of the event, purchasing the Mizuno Wave Rider shoes, money is going to go back to Project Zero for that. There's going to be T-shirts for sale tomorrow also at the event. So go to fleetfeetchicago.com, and you can find the link to Project Zero and to the event tomorrow and register, meet April, and get some money going to this great organization.
Describe the shoes because they're really cute. Thanks to Mizuno. They're pink for women. They're gray for men, right?
They're blue for men with pink highlights. They are a shocking pink for women.
It takes a lot to shock Wendy, so good luck with that.
You'll get lots of compliments.
Your feet will be shocked. I don't know if I need anything else. But it is a great color. The shoe itself, I mean, this has been around for over 20 years, this shoe, and it's a cushion shoe that is designed for any athlete, whether you're going out for a simple walk with your dog, whether you're running a marathon. This is a comfortable shoe that is not only going to do your feet well, but it's going to also help Project Zero.
What if you're a pronator?
An overpronator, because everybody pronates.
Wait, I don't know what that is. What is that?
So pronation is the natural inward roll of the foot to help disperse shock. So our body is set up with 26 bones in the foot that all work independently and then come together as a lever to move you forward.
I know that.
And so,
and
so when your foot pronates, it means you strike on the outside part of your heel and you roll towards the center. That's called neutral pronation. When you roll too far to the medial or inside, that's called overpronation, and that can have all sorts of problems. So this shoe is a very stable shoe, but it's really designed for more of a neutral gait. But
orthotics, if you wear them for overpronation, will fit into these 100%. Shoes.
100%.
Look
that's
at
amazing.
The,
how do you?
Because I got bad feet. I'm turning into an old lady at 50. I really am. But you can. Everybody listening, and I shouldn't say this, but as you're following someone down the street today, look at them, and the majority of people wear their heels out on the outer portion of their shoe.
That's pretty natural. We're more interested when you have 7 to 10 times the force of your body weight on your foot, what's happening to your foot. And one of the things that we have at Fleet Feet Sports now is the FitID system, which is a 3D scanning system, which allows us to be able to see what's happening to your foot when you're putting weight on it. It's an amazing system. It helps with the fitting of shoes and gives us so much more knowledge than we had even just a few weeks ago.
See what I know about Fleet Feet?
That's amazing.
I got bad feet.
Yeah. Wendy could be your poster child if you're interested. No. You don't have to commit today. Just think about it.
I'll have my people call.
All right, please do. Please do. Real quick, I'm curious, April, where is the state of U.S. volleyball right now? Are we looking good for the Olympics, the upcoming Olympics? Where do we stand?
We have a little bit of work to do for the 2020 Olympics. I'm making a push for it. I don't have a partner yet, so
Bill,
working on that.
If you need me to do it, I'll do it.
But
what's good for America?
Why is everyone laughing when I said that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
But we have.
Because I've never played. Maybe I don't know.
I'll consider it.
All right, think about it.
But we do. We have the AVP Professional Domestic Tour that runs over the summer. We actually had an event in Oak Street Beach 3 weeks ago. So that's looking good. That's growing every year. And the level of beach volleyball in the U.S. is going up. We have the NCAA full-blown now. You can win an NCAA championship in beach volleyball. And those athletes are now coming out into onto the beach professionally and for the USA. I'm determined to get to Tokyo, so you'll see me there.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. And we're gonna make a run for the gold.
Good.
We'll get there.
I think we will. I do think we will.
What year did beach volleyball start in the Olympics?
1996 in Atlanta.
Oh, it's been there longer than I thought.
Yeah, it's either the most popular sport in the Olympics now or the second most popular sport in the Olympics.
Who's the best that's ever been?
In beach volleyball?
Yeah.
April Ross.
I'm going to say April Ross. Remember that guy, Karch Karai? He was pretty good.
He was pretty good. We have, as the United States, we have a very good history in beach volleyball.
Yeah.
Lots of medals.
Yeah.
But, you know, the world is gaining on us. Oh. Brazil, Germany, Switzerland, everybody's getting really good now.
All right.
People are getting taller, we've learned.
Yeah,
too.
We've learned that.
Dutch people, real tall.
One final question. Wendy, Bill, wish I could go to the Project Zero event at Fleet Feet, but it is Yom Kippur, and I will be in Temple. Please let Dave Zimmer know. And how do people donate money if they can't attend the event on tomorrow?
Well, the donation is going on all month, so stop into any of the Fleet Feet sports stores in the month of October and purchase the Mizuno Wave Rider, and money will be going back to Project Zero. So even though somebody cannot attend tomorrow, they can still be part of giving all month long.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you being here.
All right. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and I want to – you need to get your own headphones.
Nope. They're too dangerous.
You look like an air traffic controller or Judy the Time Life Operator because one of your ears just fell off of your headphones.
Yeah. When my ear falls off, Carol Burnett's mom knows that there's trouble in the studio.
I thought it was her aunt.
I can't remember.
All right.
Whatever.
There is something going on Sunday, October 1st, that I usually like to go help out with, and I'm unable to do it this year. Kelly Joy O'Loughlin was a freshman at Lyons Township High School, and a burglar broke into her home, and Kelly was killed. And so what they try to do, the family, John and Brenda O'Loughlin, is they'd like to raise money for the Kelly O'Loughlin scholarship that they give to students at various high schools, not just LT. And one of their biggest events is a run that they're having on Sunday, October 1st. You can go to Kelly Joy O'Loughlin Memorial Fund.com. You can just Google it. It'll pop right up. Look for Run for Kelly. It's just a great cause, and I will be unable to attend this year because I'm receiving another award.
Yeah, well, you haven't gotten an award in almost a week, so it's about time somebody recognized you.
And I'm sorry, I swear it'll be all over, and then I'll help you get awards of many kinds.
I don't want any awards.
This is the women's...
You've got to dust them and stuff. I don't need that aggravation.
I know, and I feel silly. And then I feel like I'm going to die or something now that it's all happening in a week's time.
Mm-hmm.
The Women's Division of the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans are awarding an Impressa Award. They started this back in 1983 to kind of preserve and record for history the lives and accomplishments of Italian-American women. And my mom was all Italian. I'm just half, so I should just get half of an award.
That would seem appropriate.
But that's happening Sunday at the Medina Country Club, so I can't help out with the Run for Kelly like I like to do every year.
Oh.
So Google Run for Kelly, and you can donate. And they're just a great family, John and Brenda O'Loughlin, and they really give back to the students at LT High School and various high schools a pretty considerable scholarship for in honor of Kelly Joy.
It's very nice of them to do. Kurt Wagner's here from TV show Patrol.com and from Stomp.
I'm a Stomp dancer.
Are you Stomp dancing?
Or a step dancer.
Kurt, like I said, TV show Patrol.com. Great website if you enjoy television. Kurt, how come you're not in the studio today? What's up?
Oh, I got so much to do.
All right.
He's got to wash his hair.
Right.
Are you guys building something there? What is that?
No, we're not. You mean the loud music? The boom booms?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Boom booms?
The boom booms. As you know, there's been a change in producers, and our regular producer hasn't started yet. So we brought in somebody, and we said, Kasera, if you could just play music that startles people, we would enjoy that. So she's doing that. I hope you're not startled.
I got my groove on from that.
Did you?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Kurt, some changes over at Saturday Night Live have been announced. Is it good news or bad news, or we don't know yet?
Well, it depends. Depends on your point of view. Bobby Moynihan and Vanessa Bayer and Sasheer Zamata are out, which we knew.
I didn't know Vanessa Bayer was out.
Yeah, kind of made mention of it last year at the end. Remember on the very last episode of the season, she and Bobby Moynihan were in almost every scene.
I did notice that, and they don't usually... Well, Vanessa Bayer is in everything.
Not like that last episode, they went out of their way to put them in almost everything.
Yeah.
Not so much Sasheer Zamata. I didn't know she was leaving the show.
Yep.
I didn't see that much of her to begin with. She was...
Ew. And Bobby Moynihan has his own...
CBS show.
That looks cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but...
It's him and three, like him as a little kid, him in present day, and him in the future. Is that kind of how it?
Right, Me, Myself, and I yeah. think it's called. And so it looks at his life sort of from those different times, you know, at the same time.
All right, so they're gone. Three new cast members come in.
Where are they from?
Well, two of them are from, Kurt, say it.
Two are from Chicago. Yeah. Chris Redd was a cast member on Netflix Disjointed, and he's a Second City alum from Chicago. Second City Chicago alum. Luke Null was in the Newport Hounds, which is a Chicago-based improv sketch trio with I.O. It used to be called Improv Olympics, I.O. now.
Mm-hmm.
And Heidi Gardner is from The Groundlings in Los Angeles, so they're sort of, they picked all three from their usual places, training grounds, because they do a lot of stuff, get a lot of people from The Groundlings and from Second City.
So what normally happens, Kurt, is when you join the show, you're not immediately a fledged cast member. You're one of the featured players. Sometimes you're a featured player for two or three or four years until they make their final decision. So all three of these will follow suit, right? They're all featured players, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And they'll be there starting this Saturday when Ryan Gosling hosts.
Where did the summer go, you guys? I mean, now all the fall shows are starting.
It happened quick, didn't it? We already mentioned this a little bit, Kurt, but some jarring news from Julia Louis-Dreyfus yesterday.
Yes, about her. She has been diagnosed with breast cancer. She got diagnosed the day after the Emmys when she won her sixth Emmy for Veep.
Mm-hmm.
And
boy, that puts things in perspective in life, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the big thing here is... what I loved about her announcement was that she was able to sort of get around to talking about not just herself, but how she's lucky she has health care, good health care, and how everybody should be lucky enough to have good health care. So she made a little point for the government about that.
Kurt, I swear, I was thinking the same thing. For people who don't know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus has done really well financially, both from her own work. And her family is incredibly wealthy. You know, the Dreyfus Fund, that's her family's business.
That is?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. They have a lot of cash, but she took a moment, a very dark moment in her life, and turned it into something very important, saying, I'm fortunate, I have money, I have a union that provides me health care, but it's not that way for everybody. Let's look at this. And what a great moment to do that in. So good for her.
And I love that about her. I mean, she's spoken up on politics before and always in a smart way, I think.
Yeah. I'm curious if you watched last night's, and you, Wendy, did you watch last night's revival of Will and Grace?
I did.
I did, too. Did you see it?
I never watched it the first time, I didn't bother.
What did you think, Kurt?
I didn't like it the first time I watched it, but then I watched it again last night, and I thought, you know, I love their quick hits. I mean, I guess I didn't like the situation they were in. I thought that was kind of far-fetched.
Contrived, yeah.
Yeah,
a little
contrived.
Bit.
But I do love their delivery of some of the fun lines. And it gets better in the second and third episodes. I mean, makes more sense, I think, in the second and third episodes.
Didn't you fear, I was a little bit afraid because 11 years have passed since the last time the cast worked together regularly. They did a mini episode last year. But I thought, I wonder if the timing will still be there. I wonder if it'll have the same kind of feel. And it kind of did. There was very little that changed over the 11 years.
Right. And I, you know, I love the way that they explained away the finale of the original series by having Karen sort of daydreaming, and then she explains her daydream. And that, you know, in her daydream, Will and Grace had kids who then ended up getting married or dating and getting married.
Yeah.
And so she's asking them, everybody, you know, was this part true? Was this part true? Was this part true? And that was pretty funny, I thought.
It was very funny. They played off, remember on Dallas when there was a dream, the whole season was
Bobby.
A dream. Yeah, in the shower.
Yep.
So it was kind of their version of, well, if they can do it, we can do it. We'll just say some of it was a dream. It's
That's
easy.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, in later episodes, it's kind of fun because they sort of hit on, you know, they're of a certain age now, and they hit on dating younger people and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that's kind of funny. And
so that's revival number one. Revival number two is Roseanne, and that's still a week or two away, right?
I think that's next spring. I think. That's
oh, is it that far off?
Yeah, until the second part of the season.
Oh, I was under the impression that was starting up sooner. I'm anxious to see how
I
they pick
too.
Up. I'm hoping it's as good as it used to be.
I don't think it's coming back until January.
Oh, all right. I will wait patiently. Kurt Wagner's here from TV Show.
To
I'm going to have to. I don't
Not
have any
patiently, though.
I'll just wait. More TV talk next. Kurt
right.
Wagner's here, TVShowPatrol.com. Now, Kurt, usually you provide us with a list of things to discuss with you, and they're all good, but I just wanted to bring this up really quickly, and that's the first week of Megyn Kelly over on NBC for the extended Today Show. Have you seen any of this?
No, but I've seen clips.
Every day it's a new adventure for Megyn Kelly over the Today Show. She's asking Jane Fonda about her plastic surgery, and Jane Fonda doesn't want to talk about it.
I know. That's the one that I just couldn't believe, and bravo Jane Fonda for just shutting her down.
It was pretty interesting. I didn't see it, but I heard a clip of it.
Yeah.
Jane Fonda didn't want to talk about her plastic
Who
surgery.
Who does?
I know. And
Patricia Heaton's the only one that I know that came right out and talked about it and said, I had to do it, you know?
Yeah.
I got to look good on TV.
Yeah.
And Jane Fonda brought it up years ago. And it's not really even current news, you know, and she's like, do we really want to talk about this now? Let's talk about the show that Robert, who's sitting next to her, Robert Redford and I are in.
Who's also had some work done. I'm sorry, he has.
He didn't want to talk about it either.
Well, who would?
But he started laughing when she said that to Megyn Kelly, which I thought was also great. But, yeah, it seems like they've been having a little bit of boneheaded moves every day this week.
How's that show going to do, do you think?
I don't think it's going to do well.
I don't think so.
The thing is, they paid a lot of money for her, I think, and they might stick with it, but
no one will be honest.
I'm sure it'll be a commitment. But
that's the thing. No one will want to come on.
The cast of Will and Grace was on the other day, and then Deborah Messing said afterwards that she shouldn't have done it. She was uncomfortable. Megyn Kelly had this guy from the audience, and she asked how the characters on the show how they affected his fashion and whether or not he would become gay or something like that. Awkwardly worded question to an audience member. And then yesterday, one of the cameramen accidentally got in the shot and then swore on them during the show.
Yeah.
Seriously? I'm going to watch it now.
I think with the Will and Grace thing, then she said something about gay looks good on you.
Yeah, right.
Or something like that. And it's just like, what? What's going on here?
But don't you think, Kurt, after painting Megyn Kelly the way she was painted at Fox News, it's very hard to soften her up and say to America, look, she's your friend. You know, she used to be your enemy, but now she's your friend. That's a hard sell.
Right, it
is. Tell me about it.
But obviously,
what do you know?
It seems she's a little awkward in the spot, too.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Kung Fu is coming back, but with quite a twist. What's going on with the new Kung Fu?
Well, Fox picked it up as a pilot, which means that that means it's kind of assured that it's going to come on. And what it is, as you know, the Kung Fu was a 1970s David Carradine show. And in this one, it's years later in the 19th. That was set in the 1800s. This is set in the 1950s. And a woman, Lucy Chang, is the hero of the show. She's a Buddhist monk and Kung Fu master who travels to the U.S. looking for the person who stole her child years before.
Wendy.
I didn't see that.
Give her child
back.
The
dingo ate your baby.
and she teams up with a Korean War veteran who has secrets of his own, obviously, because everyone on TV.
Everyone has secrets.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have any.
No
and
secrets?
So each week, you know, they come to the aid of different people. You know, it's sort of the same setup, except the woman is the hero.
Will we find out, Kurt, at some point during the show that this woman is the granddaughter of Cain?
Well, you know, they haven't said that, but it is the same last name.
Oh, it is?
Oh, then for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to end up being that or some kind of thing in that way, yeah.
But she's related to Cain? What if she's related to Michael Cain? Would that shock you?
That would be really shocking. And, and also, you have to wonder, will they hire an Asian actress?
Oh.
That's a good question.
Yes.
Who was it? Keith Carradine?
No, David Carradine.
David Carradine.
Yep.
Yeah, so anyway, that's interesting with that one.
I got to jump in with a question from a listener, and I'm selfish and want to know the answer, too. Can you ask Kurt when we will see the new X-Files? Thanks. Hello?
Yes. You talking to me?
X-Files. When will we see the new X-Files?
When it comes on TV.
Yes.
But it's going to be a while for that, correct?
It might be a little while, yeah, because, you know, they have other projects they're doing. But they have agreed that let's all do it.
Scully and Mulder back together again.
Yeah.
Kurt, what about, I don't know if you watch Vice Principals over on HBO. It was a dark show last season. This season it's even darker.
Yeah, I have not watched. I'm way behind, but I watched it last season, and yeah, it was pretty dark. But this season I have not seen it yet, and I have to catch up, but Bill, it doesn't surprise me.
Bill turned me on to a good show called The Exorcist, and I binge-watched and got all caught up, and I thought it was canceled, but that is not true.
No, it's coming back tonight. In fact, the premiere's tonight, and last year it was set in Chicago or the Chicago suburbs. This year, the two main priests are sort of on the road chasing the demon, I think, is how it's working out. So they're all over the place this year.
It's like Diners, Drives, and Possessions or something. They'll be traveling all over.
With Guy Fieri is one of the exorcists this year.
A little update on the X-Files. Early 2018, it says.
Oh, right around the corner, Wendy.
Yeah, so
very
it's not
soon.
Oh, cool.
And the new,
it looks like they've filmed it already, yeah.
The new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm premieres this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm, Sunday night.
Any changes in the cast? Anything we should know about the new season?
I'm sorry, I do not know.
Will Susie anything swear more? Because you say I swear more than anyone you've ever met. I think she takes the cake.
But she's fictional. You're actual.
So am I sometimes.
Oh, you are? Oh, all right.
Aren't you? You're fictional on the radio, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure.
But the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, was it 6 years ago? Is that possible?
It is possible, yes.
Boy, that's a long time between seasons.
That's when I canceled HBO, so now I have to get it back by tonight.
You have to hurry.
Or tomorrow night. Sunday night.
Yeah.
The Mick is back, I was told by one of my sons. I haven't watched it yet. This Is Us return to big welcome. Everybody's loving that show.
And one other thing I wanted to bring up last night, this was on, have you guys seen The Orville on Fox?
No.
It's like a Star Trek parody?
Yeah, it's sort of a Star Trek parody, but it still has some serious messages. Last night was the fourth episode, I think, and the first three were okay, but last night the writing was just way so much better, and it was, it was so funny, and the storyline sort of hit on the science deniers, like current day science deniers, with a sort of science denier guy, dictator on the show.
This is the one that Seth MacFarlane's behind, right?
Yeah, that Seth MacFarlane's behind. But it was really smartly done. So applause with that.
Good. I'm glad their show. I know the first few weren't very well received, so I'm glad they're righting their ship. I hope that show survives.
I get it.
You what?
Isn't there a ship involved?
There's a ship, yeah. Oh, I didn't mean it that way. All right. Well, Kurt, thank you. We hope to see you in studio next week. If you're not too busy. We know you have other things going on, but if you're not too busy, come on by.
All right. If I get my hair washed.
It's
where cool. Do we find him, Bill?
He's at home.
No TV show.
Right now I'm at home, yeah. Come on over. But bring lunch.
Let's all go to Kurt Wagner's house, everybody. We'll give the address out later. Kurt, we'll see you. It's TVshowpatrol.com if you're looking for Kurt Wagner on the internet.
called Wahoo Wahoo, by the way.
That's not the title of the song? Isn't Wahoo Wahoo?
Kassara, what's the title of this? Do we have a title?
How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the Who song.
That takes too long.
Wahoo. You're getting confused with Chief Wahoo.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so this was in the news, which kind of surprised us. A Cambridge, Massachusetts librarian making headlines today all over the place after she declined a gift of Dr. Seuss books from First Lady Melania Trump.
Hmm.
In celebration of National Read a Book Day on September 6th, Trump and the Department of Education chose a school in each state to receive 10 Dr. Seuss books based on school programs that, quote, have achieved high standards of excellence recognized by state and national awards and Blue Ribbon Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Cambridgeport School was one of those selected, but the librarian over there, Liz Phipps Suero, decided to decline the offer. In an open letter published on Horn Books website on Tuesday, Phipps Suero explained that her school is located where yearly per pupil spending is well over $20,000. The librarian suggested that maybe the books would be better off in an underfunded and underprivileged community that continue to be marginalized and maligned by policies put in place by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos.
So she's saying the kids in our school don't have the money woes that other kids might have.
Right.
Donate the books somewhere where they're better needed.
She went on to say, my school doesn't have a need for these books. And then she argued that Trump's access to Dr. Carla Hayden, the current Librarian of Congress, should have resulted in a less tired and worn selection of titles. Seuss books, she said, are also steeped in racist propaganda, caricatures, and harmful stereotypes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, am I missing something? Because I grew up reading all these books.
Well, all right. So the guy who is Dr. Seuss, his real name is Theodore Geisel, right? And during the war, during World War II, he did his share of propaganda art, right? So what you saw was, and he wasn't the only cartoonist who did this. It was kind of commonplace. They would do stereotypical drawings of the people that we were fighting against during World War II. You know,
the Japanese mainly.
Mainly the Japanese, the Germans to some extent. You saw this at other major animation studios also, you know, Warner Brothers. Everybody did kind of a version of this. Max Fleischer, who did the Popeye cartoons.
And did he do Felix the Cat as well?
I don't know if Felix the Cat was his or
okay.
not. I'm not sure.
But, I mean, none of the racist propaganda happened in any of Dr. Seuss's kids' books, did they?
I don't remember there being any. I'm trying to think back if I saw that in any of the more popular titles. I have seen the artwork of the time that he did at the time.
I saw it online after this came up, but prior to that.
You didn't, yeah.
I mean, look at Shel Silverstein. All the kids in the world loved his books, and he was hanging out at the Playboy Mansion all the time.
I know. So she was saying, the librarian was saying that if you looked at the titles, you know, the common titles that we're all familiar with, that you could find things in there that would be conceived as being a little unsavory. I don't remember there being anything that would have fit that category.
Nor did I. 312-981-7200. I didn't see any sexism because they were just sexless people.
Right.
I don't know if the Cat in the Hat, I assumed he was a guy, but
yeah,
a guy cat.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. So I don't know I'm not positive where she's getting this. I mean, and I can understand if she's saying because of his history, but his history wasn't that, I mean, first of all, it wasn't that well hidden. People kind of knew. It wasn't as prominent as you might think, but you could always find it, the cartoons that he drew during the 40s.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, he wasn't the only one.
No.
And Dr. Seuss books, in my opinion, really taught a kid that it was fun to read.
Right.
How many of us? I mean, we all grew up reading them.
Right.
Do kids still read them today?
Yeah, they're still very popular. If you go to you know, any Barnes & Noble or something, you'll find a whole section of Dr. Seuss. I can't imagine not exposing a child to Dr. Seuss books. It just seems part of what you do.
I know. And Oh, the Places You Go was the book that Melania read to Baron when he was little. Mm. So that touched her, and she wanted to share the Dr. Seuss books with various schools. That woman.
Look at us defending the Trump family. We're in a parallel universe.
Really?
How did this happen?
I don't know. But now, after this whole thing, and let me just say that the librarian... Fipsuero closed the note by thanking Melania Trump for the recognition. She said, "I'm honored that you recognize my students in our school, and I can think of no better gift for children than books. It was a wonderful gesture, if one that could have been better thought out. Books can be a powerful way to learn about and experience the world around us. They help build empathy and understanding. You and your husband have a direct impact on these children's lives. Please make time to learn about and value them. I hope you share these books with your family and with kids around the country, and I encourage you to reach out to your local librarian for more recommendations."
You know, even if you looked at, like, I remember some of the cartoons. And this is as recent as when you and I were in grade school. Like on Ray Rayner, they would show Warner Brother cartoons. And every once in a while, in one of those cartoons, you saw a very blatant stereotype. You know, I remember being so jarred by it, going, wow, they made this cartoon not that long ago, and they're showing it now, you know, and this would have been the early 1970s. You know, Walt Disney's company has gone out of their way to kind of erase, we've talked about this before, erase Song of the South from their library. You can find it overseas, but try finding a copy of Song of the South here in the United States.
But we all saw it. We all sang Zippity Doo Dah, and Splash Mountain is pretty much based on that.
It is. It is. So, I mean, even though these are kid companies, Warner Brothers, Fleischer Studio, Dr. Seuss, Walt Disney, I guess it was more acceptable, you know, in days gone by in the 1940s to do this sort of thing. I don't think you'd see much of it now, I would hope.
Well, First Lady Melania Trump has fired back at that librarian who rejected her donation of Dr. Seuss books, again claiming their illustrations are examples of racist propaganda. The director of communications for the First Lady's office, Stephanie Grisham, said in a statement to Fox News that the response was unfortunate and Mrs. Trump wanted to use her platform, quote, to help as many children as she can. She has demonstrated this in both actions and words since her husband took office, and sending books to children across the country is but one example. To turn the gesture of sending young students some books into something divisive is unfortunate, but the First Lady remains committed to her efforts on behalf of children everywhere. Again, she was celebrating National Read a Book Day.
Isn't one of the messages of The Grinch That Stole Christmas, isn't that the Grinch is an outsider, and at some
point... His heart grew three sizes that day, sizes that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's how he feels different from the community, and then by the end they realize they're all kind of the same. So I think that's a good example of not only it not being a racist message, but his message was inclusion more than exclusion.
Although I have a problem with the Grinch because he was too mean to Max the dog, and I think, you know,
yes,
the Anti-Cruelty Society should jump on that book.
Right.
Max was overworked.
To carry that huge sleigh? Come on.
All right, well, Dr. Seuss books. Did I miss something growing up? Did Bill miss something? Was it racist propaganda? 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. It's Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and First Lady Melania Trump tried to donate some Dr. Seuss books, 10 of them to be exact, for National Read a Book Day, and the librarian at this school did not accept them. She said, no, thank you, but they have racist undertones, propagandist material, and I don't know.
How did we miss it?
I don't know.
I read it as a kid, and then I read it to my own kids.
Yep.
I don't remember there being any.
They'll read it to their kids, probably.
I would think.
Hi, Jim. What do you think?
Well, I guess I don't really see the racist undertones, per se. I guess a few of the points that I'd like to make. Green eggs and ham, mind-numbing, for one thing. Just absolutely mind-numbing.
In what way? So, why do you say that?
It just, I mean... I know they're supposed to be repetitive. I get it, but it was just it would make me crazy when my daughter would want to read that one.
Did you ever make her green eggs? Because I did because of that book. You just put food coloring into the scrambled eggs.
I didn't, and I guess I'm a bad dad because of that.
No, I'm not judging you. I was looking for ways to get them to eat breakfast.
The one that always got me was The Cat in the Hat, because I remember reading that on a few occasions. And as I recall, and it's been a number of years, but as I recall, The Cat in the Hat kind of encouraged the kids to misbehave and kind of cover it up and lie to their parents about it.
And it could all be cleaned up in seconds. Remember at the end they cleaned it up.
Is that where you learned it, Bill?
I learned it mostly from there, yes.
But that was one where I just remember, like, you know, the second time or so that I read it to my daughter, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm really not crazy about this about this whole storyline. And, you know, like I said, racist propaganda, I'm not seeing that. But it's just, I don't know, I guess I'm just not, you know, the Grinch is fine or whatever, but I guess I'm just not all about Dr. Seuss.
All right.
All right, well, thank you for giving us your opinion, Jim. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Jim.
All right, take it easy.
Bye.
There's a guy named Philip Nell who's a scholar and professor of children's literature, and he has written a book that is called Was the Cat in the Hat Black? The Hidden Racism of Children's Literature and the Need for Diverse Books. He argues that the Cat in the Hat was black, or more precisely, that Dr. Seuss's depiction of the character was based on racial stereotypes and inspired by traditions of blackface minstrel entertainment, and that dozens more children's books or decades past are brimming with insidious racist themes.
I have heard a similar argument about Mickey Mouse.
Are you being funny?
I'm being serious. There are people who have said Mickey Mouse is also black, and I guess if you're looking at the amount of coloring on Mickey Mouse, I guess you could make that argument that he is, but they're saying that the Cat in the Hat is black because of his misbehavior, right?
I guess this guy also, again, I want to give you his name because you might want to read the book after I tell you this. Philip Nell,
mm-hmm.
He says another obvious example would be the Oompa Loompas in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Who are these orange people who are enslaved happily by Mr. Wonka? The book presents slavery as happy and fun and the kind of thing that others would enjoy, and I'm not sure that everyone thinks of the book in those terms. In the original version, the Oompa Loompas are not white people from Loompa Land. They are, in fact, black pygmies from Africa.
That's true.
And though Roald Dahl changed that, he didn't change the broader themes of racism and colonialism when he did that. I got to tell you, all I could think about when I'm watching that movie is how much I wanted chocolate.
Nothing beyond that.
I mean, yeah, I guess they were workers.
I remember when the movie first came out, reading a review of it. So I was a kid. I was in grade school. And them saying that the only thing that they would take back in the movie was the fact that they had slaves working for Willy Wonka. But I didn't look at them as slaves. They had a job, but he explains in the movie how he saved them from the vernicious canid that was eating them in Loompa Land. So I was good with that. I bought that. I went, yeah, if he saved them from the vernicious canid, who am I to criticize?
Do we know they didn't get paid? Did they get paid in chocolate? You've dreamed about that.
I would rather get paid in chocolate. It would eliminate the middleman.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Confused.
A little confused.
You guys have a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I remember reading the book, The Star-Bellied Sneetches, or something like that, by Dr. Seuss, and it was all about the ridiculousness of bigotry, because there was a group of sneetches that had stars on their bellies, and there was a group of sneetches that didn't, and so the ones with stars always felt superior, and the all ones without felt inferior, until somebody made a machine that imprinted stars, and then every sneech had stars, except that the ones that had previously had stars, and those are getting confusing. So,
I forgot about that story. You're right. That perfectly illustrates it.
Yeah, and that was a Dr. Seuss story from what I recall.
Yeah. So what is the argument that they're making? With the exception of that story, do you recognize any kind of racism in any Dr. Seuss? Because we're not seeing it.
Yeah, you know, I didn't read all the Dr. Seuss stories to my kids, but the ones I did, that never ever dawned on me.
Right.
When I was reading that stuff.
They were mostly positive messages.
That's what I was getting out of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, or positive, or just fun.
Fun.
You know?
And he had that magical way with the language where stuff rhymed in and out, and he did a really good job, I always say.
Mind-numbing, as our last caller said.
Mind-numbing. Sometimes mind-numbing. That's true.
David, thank you so much. We appreciate your call.
Okay, great show. Keep it up, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
His thing was repetition. I mean, and think about it. When you're a kid, you learn through repetition.
Absolutely.
You know?
And we all, I got to tell you, I couldn't wait to get a new Dr. Seuss book. That was really exciting. Book Santa used to give us that. Mm. We have a Book Santa at our house. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Wendy. Bill, you stole my thunder, Wendy, about the minstrel show dress-ups. But I can remember in kindergarten in Mulligan School on Sheffield, that we used to sing a song, Flies in the Buttermilk, Jimmy Crack Corn, The Master's Gone Away. And it didn't dawn on me until much later that Jimmy was a slave. Cracking corn meant he was making moonshine when the master was away. And we used to sing that in kindergarten. You know, and I went to a school that had black and white kids. But, you know, of course, in today's world, I don't think you could sing that song. But times have changed.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but remember we learned about a year or so ago that the phrase peanut gallery, like forever it was part of Howdy Doody. People knew the peanut gallery meant where all the kids sat. But the derivation of it was far, far darker and had to do with slavery. And then all of a sudden you didn't hear the phrase peanut gallery much anymore.
I heard that, too. And I used to love Howdy Doody. And then after him came Pinky Lee.
Yeah.
I do remember learning that. I mean, hopefully we're wiser now.
Well, we're far more politically correct. If there's something like that that even has even the slightest hint of some kind of ugly past, people do it. We push it aside a little bit.
But Dr. Seuss, I don't know, maybe because I'm a white girl from the suburbs, I miss the racism in it, but I don't think I'm alone in that. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Wendy. You're welcome, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm still going to read Dr. Seuss, kids.
I know. I would love for her to elaborate and be more specific. I wish this librarian would say, I mentioned that there's racist undertones. Here's what I meant by it. But I haven't seen that. Have you?
Well, I don't know. We've tried to reach out to her, but I don't know if she's talking.